Hey, it's the Mentally Chill Podcast. Welcome. I am your host, Kristen Carney. And on today's show, I have my friend Colin Robinson talking about his experience as a teenager and actually young child addicted to drugs, bad drugs. Not that there's good ones. I mean, maybe there's some good ones, but bad ones. Meth, heroin, cocaine, all of the things that should have been in his DARE program if he had a DARE program. Sounds like he didn't. I didn't ask that question. But even if he did, he probably wouldn't have listened, or I'm pretty sure definitely wouldn't have listened. But it's a topic that I've never covered before and really interesting and could be talked about for so many hours. So I'm going to have Colin back on to talk more in depth about his treatment. He just talks more about his experience falling into addiction. But aside from that, we had such a good week on Patreon. Thank you guys so much for being so supportive this week. It made me feel like $1 million or at least a couple thousand. So specifically, thank you to all six of you guys for joining this week. Brandon, Jessica, Nikita, Brittany, Ryan, and Jenna. Thanks for getting me closer to the goal of 200 Patreon people, because at 200, I reveal my SAT scores. And I know you guys are dying to know, you need to know, but we're getting there, we're on our way. So thank you so much for that. And we did a movie night last Friday, and it was awesome. It was so much fun. We watched Edge of 17, and we're going to do another one next month. If you want to join Patreon to hang out with me on a Friday night and watch a movie, and you can chit-chat on the message board, or you can turn your microphone on and we can talk through the computer and annoy everyone else in the chat room, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/mentallychill. That's patreon.com/mentallychill. And this coming Tuesday, I will be doing another live stream on Patreon where I am on the camera, which I'm so uncomfortable with. It's truly a frightening experience for me. But I'm on there, and you guys can tune in and in a live setting, ask me questions and chit-chat with me and all that kind of cool stuff. So that will be this Tuesday, June 26th. I'm going to do it 4 p.m. PST time, which is Pacific time, and that'll be 7 o'clock Eastern time. And that's about it. So I hope you guys like this week's episode. We're talking about addiction. I've never talked about addiction on the show before. I have zero experience with addiction because that's the one thing that in my life I've been blessed with is not addiction. I wish I would be addicted to something because then, and I mean in terms of something healthy, like I wish I had that personality in a sense that I could skew it because you, so say hello. You like,
I hey guys.
People, I'm like, I sound like I'm talking to myself. You seem like, I don't know you that well, but I would guess because of your addictive personality or whatever you would call it, you work out all the time.
Okay, so that's an interesting thing. I actually would not relate that to my addictive personality at all. I grew up playing sports, and I'm 34 years old now, and I can't keep playing basketball and soccer because my knees are going to die, so I work out because I have to do something, otherwise I get stir crazy.
Okay, but yep. That I see a stir crazy as someone leaning toward addiction because you need to fill your brain with something.
I definitely have other things that I've replaced my addiction with, for sure. Like I will go on video game binges. Like I'll play literally all day. I'll wake up in the morning, order Postmates, and just not leave the bed.
You're
except to, you know,
better off being a drug addict than a video game addict.
It's a slippery slope.
Before you know it, you'll be like living in your parents' basement.
I'm right on the verge there. That's why I go to the gym, you know, just to keep the whole thing going.
But are you like, when you go to the gym, do you get a high off of it or anything?
No, I don't. I know what you're asking. I understand the train of thought for sure. And it's really just a thing that I do because I'm like, want to stay in shape. And I've been in shape basically my whole life. And I see a lot of friends at my age that are not in shape anymore. And they were guys I played sports with growing up, and they don't work out anymore. And now they, for whatever reason, I'm not judging, but I don't want what's going on with them.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
So that's, I kind of am scared to do that. So I'm a little worried not to work out, basically, is, you know.
Okay. So I'm just going to get right into it. You were a heroin addict, right?
Yeah, heroin and meth.
Do you,
I would
put
say
that
I did
on
more
your,
more
on your
meth
work resume.
Yeah, I don't put that on my work resume, except when I was working in recovery. So I did put it on my work resume,
cool.
Believe it or not.
Oh,
yeah.
You worked in recovery.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so you were addicted to heroin and what? I'm sorry.
More meth than anything, but heroin as well. I was kind of, you know, just a bit of a trash can. I would do whatever I could back then. Obviously smoking weed and even stupid cigarettes, which, you know, is arguably more regrettable than even the drugs.
Yeah.
But yeah, meth was like kind of the longest sustaining one. Heroin's hard to do over long periods of time and kind of hold it together, especially when you're living with your parents. Because I got, to be clear, some background, I got sober when I was, well, let's back up.
You were young. Yeah, I want to start
doing drugs when I was 10 years old.
What? You were 10?
Yeah, I was 10, yeah. And
how does one even go, you know what? I'm so stressed. I need drugs at 10. Like, what?
Okay, so I wasn't stressed at all.
But then why do drugs? Like, what are you looking for?
It just sounded fun. I've always been curious about everything. Oh. Like, I kind of am one of those people that wants to do everything.
Yeah.
And that applies to, like, pretty much any aspect of my life, if that makes any sense. Like, you know, I didn't just want to play basketball. I want to try every sport. I don't want to just visit Thailand. I want to go through all of the world.
I saw you start traveling and on your Instagram, it was like, I could see you commit. You're very committed.
Yeah,
it was
all of
a sudden like, I like to travel. I love to travel. I'm traveling and that's literally all I'm doing.
Yeah. If I find something that makes me feel good, then I'm pretty much like all in on it. And that's kind of been a theme for my life. I just need to make sure these days that thing is not, you know, unhealthy or et cetera, which it was when it was drugs, obviously.
Right. So you were 10.
Yeah. So I was 10 when I started doing, but don't let me act like I was like a hardened, you know, street criminal doing drugs all the time when I was 10. I did it whenever I could steal money from my parents, which was, you know, maybe a couple times a month or something like that.
But
and it was hard to get.
Who did you even ask? How did you
friends,
know?
Older brothers, you know, it was one of those things, you know, you got friends.
Shitheads to give a 10-year-old drugs.
Yeah. But you know, they thought I was cool and I thought they were so cool. And it was like,
what
you
were
know,
they like 14?
It's probably, yeah, 13, 14, something like that.
Now dead, probably.
Not dead. No, just, worse than dead. They're working at like the gas station where we grew
so
up.
Beyond dead.
Yeah. Beyond dead. Yeah. There's no saving
living
that.
Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, so that basically was just, it was one of those things when it started off, it was so innocent in the sense that like, I knew I wasn't supposed to be doing it, but like, I never cared what people, whenever, you know, I was just one of those kids. Like if you told me something I can't do, that's the first thing I'm going to want to do.
Yeah.
Which is not unique to me at all. So I liked smoking weed so much and you know, the feeling that I had with it was just really like kind of an innocent, like, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, this is, I'm experiencing a whole bunch of new things and the teachers, my parents are trying to hold me down to
like
keep me away
Mickey
from
Mouse,
this.
Oh my God, look at his ears. They're huge.
Yeah. Like, this is such a better feeling. Why would anybody hide this? Da, 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 da. So then of course, the next thing I was like, I want to try all the drugs. And so then drugs started showing up. I grew up in an area in Southern California called Rancho Palos Verdes, which is an interesting place to grow up in the sense that it is definitely upper middle class, but it's bordering on a city called San Pedro, which is definitely not upper middle class.
I've been to both places many times.
And it's kind of weird that there's a natural cliff that borders between them, because if they were just cities next door to each other with a street in between, you'd be like, what did I just walk across the street into? Like,
I almost
it's just
fell
a different
off
world.
That cliff, by the way. I didn't almost,
over by Trump's golf course.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
you know, the 18th hole of that course when they originally built it fell off the cliff.
Did it really?
Yeah, it fell off the cliff.
I was trying to get away.
Yeah. saw the future.
So then, okay, so 10
back to. The
drugs, to
yeah. So, you know, from like 10 to, because 10's fifth grade, right? That's elementary school. So from 10 to like, I want to say like 11, maybe. Yeah, 11-ish. I'm trying whatever drugs I can get my hands on.
Yeah.
Which is not the easiest thing in general, because even when the kids are 14, 15, it's not that easy for them even, and money's not flowing out of my pockets at that age. So, you know, you're hoping that friends or older, you know, friends, older brothers have weed, or, you know, every once in a while meth would show up, and, you know, once in a blue moon they would get coke or crack or something like that. And then LSD, which was like a love affair of mine, like an absolute love affair.
Well, people do microdosing with LSD for depression.
Yeah, I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
That's the one that I felt like, even after all the dust has settled and I have 18 years sober in October. If I don't do LSD before then, just kidding.
Don't.
No, I'm not.
Because you'll blame me on the podcast. It'll be all documented on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, do it.
I wasn't even thinking about it, but then I started talking about
Kristen. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's the only one that after all the dust has settled that I'm like, I don't regret.
Is LSD addictive?
I don't believe so at all.
Right. So, I mean, I'm not telling you to try it, but...
You can't even... The thing about LSD is you can't really do it consecutively. Like, which I've tried for sure. If you do it one day and then you do it again the next day, it uses, like, endorphins. I don't know the science behind it.
Yeah, you don't get the same high or something.
You don't even really get high at all. Yeah, I remember doing the same stuff, like, a day later and be like, what?
Well, I know that there's a... whatever it's called for when someone's having an overdose and the EMTs come and give them a shot to stop the heroin...
Narcon. For opiates, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't allow them to get high for like a day.
Right.
Narcon. And so it like frustrates the addicts
something. I've been shot up with that and I've seen people shot up with it.
Oh, God.
It's not a good look.
No. No.
Yeah.
You should definitely not post that on Instagram.
No.
Okay, so you were that young and you were doing LSD, meth, heroin, and coke.
Whatever I could get.
Oh, my God. I just, when I was that age... I thought I was a rebel when my mom for New Year's Eve would get me sparkling like juice to pop open like champagne. Like that was like, whoa.
You had like the candy cigarettes with like the, you blew
tons
them once and all the sugar flew off and you were like,
cigars.
I'm the dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
That to me was really though, it was like, oh my God. So I can't imagine being able to venture like, and one time when I was 13 years old, I went to this really creepy apartment, and I swear that was the moment that I lost my innocence. It was like I walked in, and it was just like these white dudes, like super thug, like they were thug white trash, which is like such an amazing combo.
Great combo. Yeah, that's a great combo.
And I don't know what, they had like gangster rap playing or something, and they were doing some drugs. I have obviously no idea what they were, and they had all the blinds shut, and I remember being inside going, no, this is totally wrong. My mom has the blinds open and the sun comes in and the fresh air and it's light and sunny and nice. And all of a sudden I'm in here and it's wrong. It's dark and it's smoky and it's scary. And it's, and so that moment really, because I was actually with a cousin of mine and like that was the moment her and I split off because she ended up going to that side. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and her and I never
hung out. Is she
dead
or she works at the gas station?
She's got a lot of kids. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, yeah. God, the weevil wars.
Yeah, well, lots of different dads, whatever. anyway, besides the point, but that was my foray into loss of innocence, and I ran away from it, whereas you ran right into it.
Yeah, the thing for me is I never identified it as a loss of innocence. It was really just it's hard for me to know how far to back up here, but my personality has always been, okay, let me back up a little more. When I was like 7 years old, I want to say, I was stealing hundreds of dollars from my parents because I knew they had this cookie jar where they, kept, probably like $3,000 or something like that regular.
Wow.
I wiped the whole thing out and spent it all on baseball cards.
Oh my God.
And I was going to the baseball card shop too and gambling with the guys that worked there. Basically, we would both open one pack of baseball cards and whoever had, the cards are all numbered or whatever. We just do something stupid. Like whoever has the lowest numbered card gets both packs and the other person has to pay for both of them, right?
Yeah.
And it was like that was even more exciting than collecting the baseball cards. Cause I was like, this is gambling. This
right.
Is
well,
amazing.
You gamble. I know that you go to Vegas and do like football stuff.
Yeah. I so bet I've, football.
Do you,
I don't have a gambling problem at
okay,
all.
Okay.
Like not at all. And I'm sure people are going to listen to this and be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
No, I really don't.
Lying.
So my parents took me to a psychologist, psychiatrist. I don't remember which, who cares? Probably
definitely.
A psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And all I remember was he was like a cool psychiatrist that like, could really relate to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole thing was child, psychoanalysis or whatever you want to say. Psychiatry is probably a better word. It was like a setup. It was like a gymnasium. There was a basketball court. There were skateboards. There was baseball gear. There was ping pong. There was a pool. There was, you name it.
Neverland
and
Ranch.
Basically, yeah. And you just play with him for an hour while he asks you a few questions. Me, I did not want to be there at all. So I remember just hardly answering any questions, just shooting a basketball around and being like totally not into it. And just
yeah,
being,
you were
oh.
being a little prick.
Yeah, I was just like, this sucks so bad. Like, leave me alone. Get off me, mom and dad.
Yeah.
Step off me. I'm doing what I want. So long story short, that was all that happened. I didn't really say anything. As soon as we walked out, he looked at my parents and said, okay, just so you know, this kid is like an archetypal drug addict. It's not if,
whoa,
it's when.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's not if, it's when. And he was like, do you have history of, drugs and alcohol in your family? And that's when they said, yeah, like my mother's mother died of cirrhosis of the liver when she was in her 40s, which is very difficult to do. I have, drug and alcohol problems scattered throughout both sides, you know, my dad's and my mom's side of the family. And so nobody was shocked.
Did you hear the psychiatrist say that, or was this news to you years later?
I have to be honest with you, I don't remember.
So it didn't affect you at that time. You weren't like, I heard this and now I need to do drugs.
Let me rescind that. I can't imagine he would have said that to me at 7 years old in front of me. I cannot imagine he would have said it. So no, I think I must have heard it years later. Okay. It doesn't make any sense that he would say that in front of a kid. Oh, right. This kid's going to be a drug addict. Like, it's insane.
So well, the reason I ask is just because I'm wondering if you did happen to hear it when you were seven, if that influenced you psychologically at all.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. I can tell you for sure I didn't hear it. There's no way.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. That'd be very not professional.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
He'd lose all of his skateboards and basketball courts and everything for that.
Yeah, they can just take them. Take him right away.
Yeah.
So my parents, again, and my parents are not innocent to this either. They've had drug addiction and alcoholism on both sides of their family before. This isn't news to them, you know, so I think they were just kind of, you know, keeping an eye on it, waiting for it. And then it probably happened earlier than they expected.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that, like, if I were the parent, I'd go, okay, once he's like 12, 13, maybe I have to start seeing who he's hanging out with and stuff, but 10? You're not even thinking to look when you're 10.
Yeah, so I didn't get caught, I don't want to say, until probably about that age you just said, 12, 13, something like this. There was a big bust, a weed bust at my middle school, and it was like 15 kids all got expelled, which is like a big deal.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Big deal when this happens in that age. And I was on the list, but I got wind of it, and I didn't go to school that day. And they all got searched and busted, and the whole thing went down, and they were all gone. Then they were all, with the exception, I think, of one other person, they were all a year older than me. And then I came to school the next day, clean as a whistle, obviously, and being like, you know, I don't know what you're talking about or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I played sick that day or something stupid, you know. And then that was the first time my parents got a little wind of it, because they had to sign a piece of paper saying that my name was thrown around, but they can't do anything about it. And still, my mom is such a sweetheart. So she's so innocent. And was kind of like, well, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we don't have any, you know, we don't have anything to back this up or whatever. My dad's not, you know, that sweet or whatever. So he was kind of like, yeah, I don't know about this one. We got to keep an eye on it. And sure enough, I guess they started searching my stuff, you know, pretty regularly after that. And they found, you know, weed and meth pipes and things like this. And then by that point, the cat was out of the bag.
If I was a parent, I wouldn't know what a meth pipe looked like. I'd be like, oh, look at this class science thing that you're probably doing in science class.
Yeah, it's not really the
plot. Oh, sorry for anyone listening. There's fireworks happening. So
yeah, we're recording this on the 4th of July in the future.
I picked the best dates to record.
It's great, yeah.
No, we're outside, which I never normally do, but all my roommates are here, and it just is easier to not be inside and make them be quiet. So anyway, that's why there's fireworks and guns, basically, probably.
Yeah, that's in my neighborhood. Gunshots. Yeah, it's regular.
Yeah. But, okay, so they found your stuff, started searching you, but then you continued, obviously, up until...
Oh, yeah, I continued. I mean, and this is where you can make a lot of judgments if you want. Why didn't they send you away? Why didn't they do this? I don't have a comment for that. They were sending me to rehabs, like outpatient rehabs at, you know, starting when I was like 14. And I was just, it's so easy to pass a urine test, especially in the 90s, you know? I would just bring somebody else's urine in a jar.
How did they not catch on to that?
I don't know.
Like, you bring in the urine?
Yeah, I would just bring it.
That's so stupid. They make you pee in front of them and get sexually harassed and lawsuits.
They used to not make me pee in front of them. Okay, so this is actually maybe like a kind of funny side note. They used to not make me pee in front of them, and then I went to a new one that did. So what I did is I took a catheter bag... And I duct taped it under my armpit.
You told me
across
this
my chest. And then I ran the tube, taped it down my back, and
that is so insane.
Taped it to the tip of my, you know, penis, obviously. And so then they would stand there because they didn't like watch.
Well,
yeah,
they're
not
gonna,
I mean?
Like,
yeah,
micro inspect,
like, they just stay there
wing
to make sure I'm doing it. Yeah. So then I just pop the thing on the catheter bag, fill it up with someone else's clean urine, and move on with my life.
Either you told me that, or I've seen it in a TV show, which I feel like it's a TV show or something.
It could be.
Yeah.
Which I should probably sue for that.
I know, it's your idea.
Yeah, that's...
Mastermind.
I gotta figure this out. So I was going to these outpatient places for a while, and most of the time I was testing clean. You know, every once in a while I got kind of caught off guard, and there was no getting around it or whatever, but...
Right. And then what would happen if you were caught?
You know, I would just deny it. I would just...
Even though that's
I would just
your
look
pee?
My parents in the eye and be like, no, this is fucked. Like, they switched it out or something like that. You know,
nobody... Oh my God,
nobody
such
believed,
a punk.
Yeah, nobody believed me, but they couldn't get... I wasn't gonna give... I just...
Slippery sucker.
I wasn't gonna give it up. You know what I mean? I'll look you straight in the eye and be like, wasn't me. Don't know what to tell. Like, you could have video footage. I mean, back in the 90s, and I'd be like, no, it's edited.
So drugs, I think, aren't they supposed to make you into a really good liar?
I don't think I needed them. I think I had that covered before.
Didn't need lies?
I didn't need drugs to become a great liar. Because I was already
lying. You were already a good liar. Okay.
Yeah. I was pretty shifty. I mean, my parents, like, you know, my mom's probably got a million stories of me fooling them with one thing or another, or something stupid. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to sound like a badass either. I just was.
Yeah, that's who
I just
you
lied
are.
A lot. Yeah, I just always did.
Oh, but by the way, well, which I won't even go into how we met. It was based off a lie, basically.
Was it?
Yes.
What? I don't remember that.
Because so we met a long time ago on Bumble.
Uh-huh.
And we were supposed to go out on a Wednesday. Uh-huh. Wednesday rolls around, you ghosted, and then you're like, "Oh, I just you said I get depressed or something and don't want to be around people." And I'm the depressed one. I'm the one who doesn't want to be around people.
Oh, that wasn't a lie.
No,
sometimes
it's
I just
a lie.
Check out
it's,
and
it was a lie.
It's not you.
You were
me.
Like, "Hey, I'm not at that end tour," which is fine.
No,
but
no,
then
no,
I but then I tried to get you to come on my podcast. Because I thought it'd be a funny story because I have
that's
a podcast
right.
about
that's
dating.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And I was like, well, this is kind of funny because I had been in a relationship for so long. I'd never been in the dating world. I'd never been ghosted. I'd never had experienced any of these things I started experiencing once I started dating. And it was entertaining to me. You know, it was like kind of depressing, certain aspects of it. But it was entertaining enough that I was like, oh, if this kid who ghosted me comes on my dating show, it'd be really funny. And you were like, I think it's really funny, but I think it's not an interesting story. Enough because it was just me being like a downer.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Now that we're here now and we have an actual subject to talk about, it's an interesting segue or, you know, kind of side note. But yeah, if we were supposed to talk about 45 minutes about how I ghosted you on...
No. We cut you off
tough,
after
yeah.
10 minutes.
Yeah, it would have been very tough.
Yeah. But
10 minutes even. That's a stretch.
But I think I experienced the real you at the beginning.
That's one version of the real me. Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
but that's a good thing because it's like I have beef with people who are trying to like not be who they are, and you just are who you are. And so, regardless of like if you lie or ghost and something or whatever, something small like that, it doesn't bother me because I can see you. You are
I totally understand what you're saying.
You're
yeah.
just committing. Like I always say, my example is a bad example. But my example is Snooki mm-hmm. from Jersey Shore.
Yeah, she's like, you love her or hate her, but she's authentic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, she's such an idiot, but she's just committed to being that idiot.
Right, yeah. She's like, I'm an idiot. What are you going to do about it?
Exactly. And so I'm like, oh, I like her. Yeah. But if you're like an idiot and then try to act like you're smart, then I'm like, no.
That's one of the most insufferable groups of people in the world.
All right, so back to addiction. Okay, so story.
So they get the psychiatrist story. They're watching me. The thing happens in middle school where, you know, everyone gets busted and I don't. And that was kind of the first time where my parents were like, okay, we got to keep the radar on. And sure enough, I just started getting caught up. And that's when I got heavy into meth. And that's when I dropped a lot of weight. And I mean, I was always a skinny kid growing up, but I dropped a lot of weight and I was like rail thin and kind of spooky looking and a little bit insane because I had not slept sometimes for, you know, over a week at a time and not even doing anything productive. It's not like, you know, don't let me act like I was out partying 7 nights a week with other people. I would just do meth and be in my bedroom. You know, my parents were in the next room over and I'm sitting there high, you know, doing whatever dumb stuff you do, playing Game Boy or, you know.
And your parents wouldn't know? Like, or they would not?
No, they
would kind of
they wouldn't
ignorant,
know.
Be ignorant on purpose?
They wouldn't know. They were asleep. It's 3 a.m.
Right.
You know, and I'm in my room. What are they?
So for meth, you smoke meth?
You can smoke meth. I did very little of that.
Or you inject it?
You can. I also did very little of that. But
how do you get
up
it?
Up the nose, mostly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like coke?
Like coke, but except it's not. Well, that's not the right word. I was going to say refreshing, but that's a terrible analogy for coke.
Well,
coke is numbing, so it kind of feels good. And meth burns.
Ugh.
Yeah. It burns. And you can't do, I mean, I don't know how much information you want. You don't do, your lines are not the same size as coke at all. Otherwise, you're going to OD.
So what's the addiction feel like? So once you come off of the meth, then what?
So it's not what so there's two types of addiction. Okay, let's clarify. There's physical addiction, which meth does not have. I mean, maybe it does to a tiny degree, and some people might make an argument the other way, but I'm going to say boldly that it does not have a physical addiction. The only thing that happens when you come down is you get tired and hungry because you haven't been able to sleep and you haven't been able to eat the entire time you're on meth, right? Heroin is the one that has a physical addiction. So whether you have an addictive personality or the drug addict gene or whatever you want to call it, heroin will get you. If I shoot you up with heroin for the next 5 days and keep increasing the doses, you cannot stop without kicking heroin.
Even someone like me who doesn't really tend to want to do drugs or be addicted
to drugs? You
will get
the sickest you've ever been in your life. You'll get times 10 at least. You'll be sweating.
Coming off of it, right?
Coming off of the heroin, yeah. So then as I was going in and out of rehab, you know, outpatient rehab, trying to pass drug tests, and that's when the wheels started falling off. That's when I started doing, you know, I started getting access to a little bit more money. You know, you sell little drugs here, you know, you buy more and sell some, da-da-da, and I started coming up with a lot of scams, and, you know, again, victimless scams where the bank was the victim or whatever it was. Nothing I feel comfortable talking about on the air, just in case. I mean, this was a long time ago, but still, let's just play it safe. But yeah, so I was getting access to drugs or having money for drugs became almost a non-issue at that point by the time I was like 14, 15. And that was a terrible combination for me because it just became that. That became basically like, you know how you're saying like with the coffee and the Excedrin, that was just kind of my day. You know, I would do this and this and this, and I need to do this and this and this. And then I would go through heroin binges where I was strung out on heroin for X amount of time in a row.
Were you cognizant of what was happening? Were you going, oh my God, I am off the rails and this is not good? Or were you so lost?
Eventually,
that you didn't even
eventually I was. So yeah, that's a good question. So eventually I was. So my parents were kind of throwing me into rehabs here and there for a while. And that's when I was still kind of like, you know, fuck this, I'm doing what I want. And then eventually I was checking myself in, or I would come back to them and be like, I need you to take me to the hospital right now. You know, and I would disappear for, I mean, this show's not long enough. I could tell hours of just absurd stories. So, you know, there's
nightmare.
Yeah, it's super sad.
It's just crazy that people can morally sell this stuff to other people. Is it just people getting high able to sell it to other people?
No, absolutely not. Most of the people that are selling heroin don't. You know, that's a conversation for a whole another thing. Ultimately, what it comes down to is if there's money to be made on something,
people
there's someone
will do
that's
it.
Gonna sell it.
I know.
Yeah. You could bust every heroin dealer in the world today and there would
I
be new ones tomorrow.
Here's the deal. I feel bad accepting $5 donations on Patreon, patreon.com/mentallychill.
I can tell. You feel terrible
I
about
feel,
this.
But I do. I feel so guilty because then I am like, who am I to have this person's $5 a month? And I mean, I put stuff up and there's perks and stuff, but I can't even accept. I mean,
so let's back up. First off,
but it's hard
for you to feel that is insanely weird, especially because you're doing a podcast that is like you're doing the Lord's work, if you will. You know, like you're talking about things that need to be talked more about. You
you're
know,
you're gonna get struck down for saying that.
Yeah. Okay. It's fine.
but no, I know it's like but that's the example that I'm trying to give that. I can't even barely accept something that maybe I deserve, let alone accepting
money. Well, then you're just not cut out to be a heroin dealer.
I'm not.
Okay, it's not in your future. I'm sorry.
Thank God.
I'm sorry.
I think nothing money-wise I'm meant to do. Like, I feel so guilty accepting money. Like, if I was a doctor and I got paid really well, I'd be like, yeah, but I mean, it's not really worth that much money.
After like 10 years of medical school, you'd be like, pay me now.
I know. Yeah. That's true.
Also, again, you're taking money for something that's probably helping people and raising awareness on like legitimately serious issues that are not talked about enough. And
right.
I know you talk about depression and suicide a lot on the show.
Yeah.
And alcoholism, first off, goes hand in hand with that a lot of times,
totally.
As we know. But they're both similar in the sense that for some reason there's these weird social stigmas on them that people are supposed to be kind of ashamed or keep it to himself. Or, you know, if a businessman has to go into rehab, and I was in rehab with. You know, when I was in rehab, that's a whole other story. But when I was in rehab, I was the youngest person in there. I was 17. I wasn't even really supposed to be there because you have to be an adult. I was the only one under 18 for sure. And the average age in there was probably 35 to 40, you know? So you had a lot of business executives, people with lives,
right.
People with millions of dollars that needed help. But they were trying to hide that from their daily lives because, you know, they're like, oh, well, God, we go out and play golf with the execs. And, you know, we take shots after and I have to pretend I drank it and run to the bathroom or something like that. It's like, dude, what is that? What is wrong? Like, why don't you look at them and be like, look, I have a disease. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. You know, it was genetic or whatever happened. It happened. And I just can't drink.
Right.
I can't do it. Otherwise, it fucks my life up. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. The problem is that all these people that are in, you know, my position where they get sober, a lot of them want to hide the fact or not talk about the fact or a little embarrassed about the fact. And that just makes the problem so much harder to address. And depression is the same way. And obviously suicide is similar, but obviously the person that commits suicide can't talk about it. But, you know, attempted suicide, people that they don't want to discuss it. You know, they want to pretend like it didn't happen. It's a, you know, they're embarrassed about doing it. That makes me so sad because those are the people that could probably add the most to the conversation.
Absolutely.
By saying, look, this is what I was going through. And thank God I didn't die because I made a huge mistake and I got lucky.
Yeah.
Don't make my mistake. Like, things will change,
well,
right?
Well, it's like, I guess, you know, when you're little and, you know, you cover up your private parts because you want to, and so, you know, like for me, like I was ashamed of my body. It's like, we're kind of taught to be embarrassed about certain things.
Socially,
and that's
absolutely.
One of them that we're just indoctrinated into, you know, when we're born into this world, that's just part of it. And so, you know, we're definitely hitting a point where there's more of a conversation.
There has to be.
There's definitely a conversation now, I do think, at this point. But I don't think that the stigma is gone yet, totally. I mean, the stigma is definitely not gone. But I do think the step one has been taken. I think there's a lot of, you know, because of celebrity suicides and celebrities having some mental health issues, et cetera, the conversation is there, but the steps have not yet been taken to better the situation from the conversation. So we have step one, the foundation conversation is happening, but yeah. Now we have to get to step two.
Let me tell you this. This is one of the examples I'm talking about. So I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous for years.
After you got sober.
When I got sober. Yeah. Starting before, actually from before when I got sober, but you know, obviously I went to 10 meetings a week for the first two and a half years of my sobriety. Which is quite a lot.
So AA can be people not just drinking alcohol.
Oh,
but just
AA
addicts
has transcended
anything.
To drug addicts, at least in Los Angeles. Right. I don't know if it's like that all over the
Instagram
US or whatever.
Instagram addicts, are we welcome?
I don't think so, but I couldn't comment on that. But I know like there's Narcotics Anonymous and there's Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's still some old sticklers that don't want the drug addicts at the alcohol meetings and don't want the alcoholics at any meetings or whatever.
Give us a bad name.
Yeah, that's a dying breed. I mean, when you walk into an AA meeting, if you've never done anything but cocaine in your life, you're welcome, and people are, they don't, it's not even an issue. They're just you need here to get sober. Like, you know, that's not a thing at all. Like,
right.
Not at all.
Right.
It's a good question though. But that's in LA. I can't comment for the rest of the country. I don't know how that goes there.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Sorry.
You were saying about the stigma and the conversation. And
I brought up meetings. Yeah. Okay, so I went to AA in Los Angeles, and I was living in Century City. My rehab was in Century City, which is right on the border of Beverly Hills, okay? And I was going to meetings all around there. That's where I went for those two and a half years, you know, once or twice a day. And it's anonymous, so I'm not going to name anybody, but there are a ton of A-list celebrities that
of
are
course.
Sober people.
Oh,
you know?
I've heard that about the meetings here.
Yeah,
in
there's
LA.
A ton of them.
Ton of
that have an audience.
And so tourists, if you want to meet celebs and you come to Hollywood, Beverly Hills, go to an AA meeting.
Yeah.
You'll see them all.
Yeah, you can. But if you're not an alcoholic, don't do that to us, please. So my problem is seeing some of these guys and girls who are 20, 25, 30 years sober. And A-list, I'm talking about A-list celebrities, you know, people that you know by first name and you would love to take a picture with if you saw them on the street, something like that. And they'll never talk about it in the public ever. They will never even address it. And it would just be so nice for them to be
if
like,
they did,
oh,
yeah.
By the way,
look,
you know,
it, it's me
find
too.
A way to bring it up. I'm going to support this. Why? Because I'm sober 30 years.
Well, you know what? Something's going to happen, like the Me Too movement or something, where everybody's going to come out and be like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. And it's going to be like a whole like Twitter campaign thing where everyone's hashtagging it. I don't know if that one's super close in the future, because that doesn't seem to be the most talked about thing or the
no,
drugs and alcohol
right now. No, because
it's also
victimless. You did it to yourself is the stigma. It's tough to be like, we need to band together to protect these people from themselves. Like, people don't understand.
Well,
you know?
I asked that question before we started taping. So earlier you guys heard me say, I asked a question that I didn't want to ask on air because I didn't want to sound dumb. And the question I asked was, I know it's a disease, addiction's a disease, but is it a self-induced disease? And that's an ignorant quote unquote question that I'm asking because I've never experienced it. But when you said, you know, well, everyone in my family has problems, I see how it's hereditary completely.
It can be.
But I wonder if you just never, ever, 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 ever touched any of it at all, if it would
like if I lived in an area where it was never even an option somehow?
Yeah.
Okay. So in that fantasy world where there just was no drugs and alcohol, I never heard of it and I couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
That's it. So this is an interesting question with, I think, a pretty good answer. The drugs and the alcohol are not the problem for drug addicts. They are, period. They are not the problem. They are a symptom of the problem. The problem is the addictive personality. And when something goes bad that you get addicted to, that becomes a major problem. On the opposite end, I can tell you this with no ego. If I get fixated on something positive, I will accomplish way more in that field than someone who's not a drug addict. It's not even close. As soon as I set my mind to it, I consume myself with it 100%. You do not stand a chance against me in whatever it is.
Right.
You know, and I don't mean that like, you know, I'll pick up golf tomorrow and be Tiger Woods. That's not what I mean. But I mean like on an equal playing field, if we both decide we're going to get into, you know, physics tomorrow, and for whatever reason, I'm like, I'm 100% in on that. You better have a heavy math background or you're done.
Right. It's a weird, and this is not the right term, but the only term that's popping into my head at the moment. It's almost like a superpower in a way, if you use it in the right way.
Yeah, if you happen to get addicted to things that are healthy, which happens to me most of the time, the things I get hooked on, you know, or where I feel the addicted things are basically neutral. Like, they don't matter what. I'm going to give you, you know, a weird example. several years ago, I went through a phase for like a month where, and don't ask me, how, I have no idea how this happened. I stumbled across dishware, like glasses, plates, and mugs and things like that from the Great Depression. They call it Depression glass.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, they used to give this stuff out at gas stations when you filled out, they give like one mug or whatever. And there's a particular one that's called jadeite green glass. And I have like a $5,000 set of this jadeite green glass that I acquired all in like 3 weeks on eBay when I was like bidding on every item and wouldn't lose anything. And then I kind of stepped out of it and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? I don't even cook.
Right.
They're just sit there.
Right. So do you think it's a manic thing? Like, is there something tied in with
the
mania of it?
I would probably reserve that question for someone medically qualified. Yeah. I don't know how to qualify mania, really, so I couldn't answer that responsibly.
Yeah, well, that's such a weird thing with the mental health stuff, and I saw this on the last episode.
Let me cut you off real quick, though. Yeah. In the sense, what I think of mania is kind of like a chicken with its head cut off for a little bit.
Yeah, but they overspend. Like, when you have mania, you go on like a shopping spree or, something like that.
I'm like regular. You know what I mean? The rest of my life is regular and I'm not exhibiting weird signs in anything else. It's just that all of a sudden,
you'll go all in.
This
on
is
something.
A thing that I'm like, I need to make sure I get this plate because I have the mug and the,
right,
whatever that matches.
And you don't fall off after. You don't go, because you might go, oh, what did I just do? But you don't fall into a depression or anything.
No. I just kind of stepped out and laughed. And I'm like, well, now I got all this cool glass.
Right.
I'm sitting on my cupboard in the kitchen, and people come over for the first time. I'm like, oh, what is this? It's so cool. And I'm like, oh, well, that's proof I'm a drug addict.
Part of the process of getting off the drugs, were you seeing a psychiatrist or anything like that?
I was not seeing a psychiatrist. So I went to, the last time I got high was October 9th, 2000, and I basically did exactly what I said before. I was gone for 4 or 5 days, and I just showed up at my parents' house, and I was like, I need to go to rehab right now. So they took me to rehab. I went to rehab.
What made you say that?
I was miserable, and I was dying, basically. It was not sustainable. Like I told you, I weighed 88 pounds. It wasn't good. I couldn't keep going, and I knew that I couldn't keep going, and I tried to get sober myself 2 or 3 times before this, already knowing for probably a year and a half or 2 years, already knowing that this is not a thing I can continue doing. There's no way. And long story short, this guy named Bob Timmons, who's now dead, never knew him before. He was like a friend of a friend of a friend. He flew down from Northern California, met with me for 30 seconds in the rehab. And I was like, what the fuck was that? Introduced himself, asked me like 2 questions, then
sugar
left.
Sugar daddy?
No, not at all.
I thought he was going to give you money.
He did give me money, but it was not a sugar daddy at all. He turned out to be like one of the best dudes ever. He was a guy that was working professionally with like basically every celeb you've ever heard of that has like a drug problem. Like they used to call him, right? Chris Farley. I shouldn't name anybody else, but people that are sober.
Clearly he's successful.
Well, he's got a lot of people that are long-term that I won't say because I'll maintain their anonymity.
Totally. Yeah.
But that he works with, and he's apparently paid quite well for his work there.
Yeah.
And he uses a lot of that money to try and help people that were in my situation. So he paid for me to continue.
How did he hear about you?
Through a guy who knew me, through his AA sponsor, and it was that guy's AA sponsor. You know,
see, that's when I say, do you realize how lucky you are?
Exactly. It was told just dumb luck, And he heard about it, and whatever got to him, it was bad. They made it sound bad enough that he got on a plane on his own expense. Flew down to Southern California. I was in Orange.
To help some kiddies.
I was in Orange County by the time. Orange County at the time, in sober living, in rehab at Chapman Hospital, which is, if there's a more depressing place in the world to get sober than Orange County, let me know it.
That sounds it.
Oh, God, it's brutal.
Chapman Hospital in Orange County.
Yeah. So he took a look at me, one look at me, and basically decided there's no way, so he bought me a couple more days. Then he arranged with a sober living house called Liberty House in Century City. And they took me up there, straight from there. Didn't go home, didn't do anything like that. They took me straight from the rehab to Liberty House. He had to convince the owner of Liberty House to take me as a minor because I had just turned 17,
So that's why you were in there as the young person.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had to convince him.
Yeah.
And he got him to take me in there. And I lived there for 2.5 years. And I managed...
2.5 years?
Yeah. Two years?
Holy
maybe 2 years,
moly.
Something like that. It's tough to remember because I managed the property. I ended up... After I got sober for a while, I ran the place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was second to the owner for a year plus, and
Talk about the inmates running the asylum.
Well, that's how they run those.
That's really cool.
Yeah, they only have drug addicts working there.
I kind of semi-knew that, not really, but for a few times, it was so random. A couple of years ago, I hung out with Andy Dick a bunch, and he hangs out at a specific place in Santa Monica, and so I would be there with him and whoever his friends were having... lunch or dinner, and he, at the time, I don't know if he still is, but he was living at a treatment facility in Malibu, and the guy who...
Passages, yeah.
Was it Passages?
I think so, yeah.
The one with the commercial? I don't think it was Passages, because it's this guy, who the guy who runs it was one time out with us at this restaurant, and he was saying how he used to be an addict, and he was running it, so I think he had told me or something that's how it works.
Yeah.
But I never
For the record, just to correct the nomenclature, not really for you.
Thank you, but I have no idea what I'm talking about.
You never used to be an addict.
Okay, you're always an addict.
Yes, yeah, always
an
addict.
Which is kind of a bummer that they keep that. Like, I understand. I feel like, you know, there's the positive side of why they're trying to say that, but also I feel like it could hold you down. Like, if you're a victim, you're always a victim. You know, you're going to live in that mentality.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I think it's more about how you... I think the idea behind it is, first off, to know that just because you've been sober for X amount of time doesn't mean that you can start drinking again without it going terribly, or start doing drugs again without it going... I'm under no false pretenses. If I start... I never even drank, okay? I've been drunk maybe 5 or 10 times in my life. It was impossible for me to get, you know, alcohol at that age, but I never got carded buying heroin or meth, right?
Yeah.
I have no false pretenses about my ability to go and have a glass of wine. Zero.
Right.
I already know what will happen, even though it makes no sense to me, even though I know I'm looking at my life right now, I'm like, I'm not doing drugs again ever. I have no desire. If I start drinking again, I'm going to start smoking weed again. And then once I start smoking weed again, I'm... Next thing you know, 5 years down the line, I'll have a needle in my arm. And I've seen that happen to people that were sober longer than me. I've seen it.
Does that depress you?
Not at all.
It doesn't make you feel like the future's bleak? Like, if I screw up, then I'm just screwed?
No.
That's good.
It's actually, like, nice to know. Because I wouldn't... It would be worse if I was like, fuck, I wonder if I can. Like, I see all my friends and I'm 34 years old now. Can I just have a beer with them? Da-da-da-da-da. I would always wonder. And I'm like, oh, I'm sober, though. Should I risk it? Da-da-da-da. Like, I know. I was lucky to see, you know... I mean, it's sad because they were the victims, but... I was lucky to see people sober as long as I am or longer do that and die.
Right.
You know, and their wives leave them and their kids not talk to them anymore. And their whole life fall apart. Sober for 25 years, and I saw this guy's life fall apart in a year and a half where his wife left him, the kids were gone, and he died. He overdosed.
Oh, my God. It's so tragic.
Yeah, 25 years. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's in his 50s, you know, something like that.
Right. Like, this is such a huge conversation, and once I... Once we start talking about it, I kind of went, oh, shit, there's no way I'm going to make this an hour-long show.
We can do a part two.
We'll do a part two.
Yeah.
So right now we're going to do some segments and get into the silly, zany part of the show.
We'll start next time at the rehab. I'm sure the listeners will be waiting with bated breath.
They will be.
Yeah.
Because they'll be addicted to this podcast.
Ooh, look what you just did.
Okay, so I haven't done a Who's Sadder in a long time. I've tried to refresh with some new segments, but I'm bringing Who Sadder back this week. And this is an obvious one that I haven't done. I don't know why I haven't done it. Maybe I have done it and I can't remember doing it. But because these two women are now divorcees, both from Brad Pitt, they're obviously two you can compare together.
Mm-hmm.
Both beautiful actresses, etc. So Who Sadder, Jennifer Aniston or Angelina Jolie?
Okay, so I should preface this by saying that my kind of, you know, pop culture knowledge is as low as somebody my age could possibly be. But I would
say... That's good. You should wear that as a badge of honor.
I would say that, and I don't mean this in a mean way to Jennifer Aniston, but I would say that she would be the sadder one because at the end of the day, Angelina Jolie is Angelina Jolie.
Totally. Here's the reason I think Jennifer Aniston is sadder, regardless of Brad, you know, I'm sure she's obviously very far moved on from Brad Pitt. Yeah, well, she was married.
What was
but
that,
then,
like 20 years ago or something?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. But then she got remarried and they just got divorced or separated again. So now she's single again, which has always been kind of...
Well, I saw on like National Enquirer cover the other day that they're back together. So
they are?
No, it was on National Enquirer. Come on, stop.
Such an idiot. But the reason I think that she is sadder is because she's tried to transition into film as a serious film actress, more as an Angelina Jolie type, and it just does not work.
Well, the thing for me with Jennifer Aniston, and again, I don't mean to make this a bashing on Jennifer Aniston, but she was lucky to be on Friends, which was a hit show, and I think that her character on Friends would have been just as popular if they'd replaced her with whatever other girl that they might have given the job
to. See, I kind of semi-disagree.
Okay, I didn't watch Friends, so you have a more educated opinion
to
me on that?
Friends, I secretly watch Friends a lot because I'm a huge Seinfeld fan, so I usually don't really like to admit or bring up my
love. I was gonna
of
say
Friends.
I thought you were just gonna say I'm a huge Seinfeld fan, so of course I love Friends, and I was just gonna drop the mic and walk out.
No, I was gonna say no, so I shouldn't like Friends, but right. I secretly do. And they play it on reruns during the day, and so yeah. I usually put it on my, you know, I put it on the background or yeah. something for background
noise. You
should
edit this out, but yeah.
No, I will wear it proud. It's a badge of honor. I don't care. But you know, I watch her, and there's part of me that wants to go, you know, she's just this pretty girl that can deliver lines. But then I think, no, she actually does a really good job. So the Jennifer Aniston thing, she has tried to do the film thing and be the darker character. She's done a few, and I've seen them. And there's one, Cake, was a movie, and you could tell she like so wanted like an Oscar for that. It just like, she is a sitcom. She's a 100% amazing sitcom star. Never will be a movie star. She can do like comedy movies that are silly, like, you know, Horrible Bosses and stuff like that.
Sure.
But she's not going to be the Angelina Jolie actress, serious, like yeah. dramatic actress that she, I think, really, really wants to be. I love when people are just who they are. And Jennifer Aniston just is not a
right,
dramatic
just
actress.
Yeah.
Just be you and commit and just do the comedies. Just
totally
crank them out. You know,
people
she does,
love
but,
you for that. They adore you for that.
Yeah, so just be you. So I think that's why she's sad.
But that's the thing. If that doesn't make her happy, then it doesn't make her happy, which I understand that too.
Totally.
We don't
understand.
Know the story of that. I mean,
of course, yeah. I know. Believe me. I totally get that. But I feel bad that she's kind of reaching for something and it doesn't seem totally attainable. I shouldn't feel bad for her. She's got millions and millions of dollars. She's
yeah,
fine.
She can afford to try for a while. By the way, I was totally unprepared for this segment. I had no idea
you
this
was
on the show.
No,
so
I know.
This is
you did good. I like to
super bizarre.
I like to surprise because it's fresher.
Did not expect to talk about, you know, comparing celebrities tonight.
Okay, so we both agree that Jennifer Aniston is sadder.
Yeah, I don't want to say it like that. Let's say Angelina's happier.
No, this is what we
this
do on the show.
Segment?
We don't
okay.
beat around the bush. We're not sensitive. I mean,
all right.
Sensitive to an
sorry,
extent,
Jennifer.
But we're fucking real as shit.
Sorry, Jennifer. You're great, but Angelina's...
When we're referring to two gajillionaires that are very successful and have pretty much probably all the happiness that one can achieve,
yeah.
as we are aware of.
I think they'll be okay when this
I
podcast
think
never gets back to
knowing
them.
Knowing that we think one's sadder.
Oh, I think I'd
think
be more.
Survive.
I think I'd be more impressed if they ever know that we think
well,
one of them is sadder.
The irony in the whole thing is that I'm the saddest. Like, it's pathetic. That's why it's funny, because it's like, you know,
yeah.
I'm the sad one comparing these people who are.
Yeah, you're like a poor man's Harvey from TNT.
I am.
Yeah,
it's so pathetic. Great. But also, you know, I do want to say you don't know what's going on behind closed doors with like the celebrity suicides, etc. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. So for the schizophrenia segment today,
okay.
I like that you're going to recommend not a film to watch.
Well, I just said I could. How does the segment work?
So we just talk about a movie, and I sometimes relate it to mental health, but it's not necessary,
okay.
but it's just like a film recommendation.
Okay.
And so the one that I'm doing today is a Woody Allen movie, which is a newer Woody Allen movie called Blue Jasmine.
Mm-hmm. Haven't seen it.
It's so good, but I don't know if everyone else would think it's good. It's my dream style movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a character study, so it's just all about, so Cate Blanchett, you know who that is.
Yeah.
She plays Jasmine, and she's left by her husband who's been cheating on her, played by Alec Baldwin,
mm-hmm.
and they're very wealthy. They have this like very prominent lifestyle in New York City, and she's just like, you know, this rich woman and do whatever she wants, like and mm-hmm. go to high end parties, whatever.
Debutante, blah blah blah.
Yeah. And then basically she just falls from grace completely and just has like a mental breakdown.
Hmm.
And it's so realistic and so good, and I just love seeing characters that are like trying hard and just continuously failing, but their heart is in the right place. Like she's just a wreck, and it's very depressing because you kind of see that youth element where men move on to the younger, better thing, and then you're left with yourself as a woman, and it's incredibly tragic, but it relates to the book that I'm almost done reading, which I've been reading for so long, but it's such a small book. It's pathetic how long it's taken me to read.
Mm-hmm.
Man's Search for a Meaning. That's what it sounds like. No. Man's Search for Meaning. No one searches for meetings.
Yeah,
we're like running away from
this
meetings.
This is like a work document. Jesus, no wonder it's taking so long to work.
But it in a way relates to the man's search for meaning, because it's written by this guy, Dr. Frankel, who was a Holocaust survivor. And in the book, he basically just talks about, when you are stripped of everything you've ever earned or ever acquired in your life, will you be okay with who you are? And that movie ties into Blue Jasmine, or that book ties into Blue Jasmine for me, because she was stripped of everything she was. And because she was defined by money and status, she was nothing. She had nothing left. And so it's a good reminder to be solid on who you are, so that if you lose everything you've ever earned, like in the book, his name's Viktor Frankl. He was a doctor in real life, and he survived the Holocaust. And but when he went into Auschwitz or whatever first camp he was in, he like was desperately clinging onto his last like research paper, because they'd taken everything from him. And you don't, back then, there's no internet. It's not stored in your email. You know, right. You can't go retrieve it.
Right.
It's like, this was his last known work, and like he was desperately trying to keep it. And I don't know if he ended up keeping it, because I still haven't finished the book, but which I will finish in 5 years. But he had to define himself beyond just the things that he achieved in life, or that, you know, he could show off on a resume. So anyway, so that's my movie recommendation for this week, is Blue Jasmine.
Okay.
So anyway, pressure's on.
Okay. So again, in reference to my pop culture being very low for a human of my age, the last movie I went to, which is going to be the movie that I absolutely recommend no one see.
Okay.
And this might be a bit polarizing. It was so bad that I haven't been to the movie since.
Oh, it scarred you.
And it was. And I hadn't seen the first one, and I did not want to see the second one, but I don't want to say dragged there, but I was in Amsterdam with,
a lady friend.
A lady friend who did not want to see it either, and a buddy of, and another friend of mine from Germany. What's up, Marat? If you're listening, you know this is you. And he was like, oh, the first one was good, you know, and she'd seen the first one as well.
But he's German. You can't trust him.
You think I don't know that? But he's actually Turkish.
Oh.
But he's from Germany.
Yeah, I was going to say his name doesn't sound very German.
So I tend to trust it a little. No, I'm just kidding. Shout out to all the Germans. I love you. So he dragged me to Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh.
And that was, not exaggerating, not being dramatic, the worst 3 hours of my life.
That's Avengers, right?
I don't know. What's Avengers? Again, pop culture.
It's Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm Googling, because I just saw the
It was
most
the one with
Avengers.
Like this. The only cool character was this little like tree branch named Groot.
Oh yeah, it's Guardians of the Galaxy.
And he just walked around, kept Avengers. Saying, "I am Groot," and yeah. That was the most intelligent line in the whole movie, and the only time it was entertaining.
Well, that's interesting. So you obviously are incredibly removed from pop culture, because Avengers Infinity War just came out, which is a sequel.
Oh, I kept hearing about Infinity Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the same.
So here's the
series.
Thing. I like loathe those comic book movies because they suck, in my opinion.
Well,
I like the Christian Bale Batman ones, because they're more serious,
yes,
and adult, and they have an actual story. Like Christopher Nolan wrote like a story, like
they're
a more
weighted,
complex
yeah,
story. Yeah,
like
it's a
weighted
movie.
And
if it wasn't a comic book movie and it was just a random thing, it was still a good movie. I don't, how many times do I have to see that Spider-Man got like bit by a spider inside this machine and turned into a spider? Like, I don't care at all. I already know. How many times do I see Superman, dude? Sorry, Jerry Seinfeld. I love you, buddy, but Superman is not interesting.
Well, as a kid, and Jerry was obsessed with it as a child, and so he brought it into his adult life because Jerry kept this innocent, like, whimsical vibe throughout his life in comedy.
Yeah.
But the thing with the comic book movies is I totally agree. However, I kind of fake like them. It's almost like I'm faking like an O or something going.
This is what I feel like most people do, which is why they make so much money and keep making them. Please stop doing that.
I know. Well, I'm a huge fan of Bret Easton Ellis, who wrote American Psycho, the novel.
Correct.
Not the movie, but the book.
Right.
And he does a podcast, which I'm actually subscribed to on Patreon. It's the only thing that I also, because I have a Patreon page, but it's the one thing that I subscribe to on Patreon. Mm-hmm. And he has a podcast. And
I've never been on Patreon. I don't know what it is.
It's like this donation site for people to support show, like podcasts and musicians and stuff like that,
gotcha.
And comedians, whatever. People who don't have a job, essentially. It's a way to support them. Brett, I subscribed to his podcast specifically because he was talking about Avengers Infinity War, and I know he would just hate the living daylights out of it. And I was like, I have to hear what he's going to say about it. And he said everything that to me is totally true. It's like the death of American cinema.
It's and how I feel, yeah.
It's not actually a film because films have beginnings and ends, and this has now changed the environment of cinema or film to sound pretentious. My friend Kyle was on the show. He's like, I hate when people call it film or a picture. It's like pretentious. But it's changing movies because it's no longer like you go see a movie and that's the movie. You go see a, what's the word they use?
It's like a trailer for a lifestyle or something.
Well, no, it's like a, it's a larger brand. It's a movie for now 5,000 more movies
like, look
to
what
come.
Star Wars is becoming. Look what Star Wars is becoming. They just keep pumping them out.
It's basically long form television shows now, but labeled as movies, but it's like, they're not really movies. They're continuations of each other, but it's because they just make so much money. So you're losing that art form and the, it's almost like it plays into the ADD of America because it's fast colors and moving and fights. And so you're
and super immature.
Yeah. And it's like the movie Idiocracy. Do you know that movie?
Oh yeah. With Luke Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that almost.
Yeah,
it's like we've
yeah,
diluted.
Yeah. Like the first step of those stairs. Yeah.
Right. Watching movies like this just constantly. But my friend Kevin, who actually is supposed to be on the show soon, my friend Kevin Avery, he's a comedian, and I go see these Avengers movies, or like I see comic book movies with him, and he doesn't know this, but I act like I'm super into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not. I'm like, okay, well, it's entertaining enough. I'll follow the story.
I'm praying
I'm not
that
be
when
a
Kevin
fan.
Gets on the show, he's like, Kristen, I feel the same way.
No, he is so, I believe me, I wanted him to too, because when he was like, hey, let's go see Avengers, and he was super excited, I just couldn't go, eh, not my thing. I just was like, I'm. You know what? He likes this. He's a grown adult man and has to find pleasure somewhere. So I'm going to let him like Avengers.
Sure.
And so I didn't like go, well, you know. So anyway, he's going to be on the show soon. So hopefully listeners won't tweet to him that I don't like the, I don't like the Avengers stuff.
Oh, they will, especially after you said that.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Last segment, depression impression. Which
can we just give it a shout out to Rick and Morty for all you people that are suffering from low IQ movies? Go enjoy Rick and Morty.
You told me to watch Rick and Morty and I couldn't.
Why?
Because I was upset about the names. Morty should be Rick. Rick should be Morty.
You're going to have to move on from that,
No, I can't let it go. Morty looks like the old scientist Marty from Back to the Future, and his name's Rick, but then he could be Morty.
No.
The name's right
just
there.
Give it a,
just give it to him.
I promise you, just give it a little longer, and you'll never see an Avengers movie again.
All right. Because cartoons really aren't my thing.
Oh,
like, I tried to watch BoJack Horseman. No, thank you.
I'm
no,
just telling you.
Rick. Simpsons, okay, yes, of course I can do Simpsons. But beyond that, I'm like, eh.
Rick and Morty's the one.
It's all right.
Best TV shows of all time. It goes like this: Seinfeld, Rick and Morty.
Really?
Yep. Curb's in there somewhere too, but that counts as Seinfeld. Same thing.
Yeah, they're the same. All right. Well, I'll have to watch it to be the judge because I do think I'll be the final say.
Up to you. If not, I'm sure you'll enjoy Avengers: Infinity War too. It's gonna be great.
Right. I have no credibility.
It still never stops.
Right. Okay. Depression impression. We talk about somebody with. In the spotlight with mental health issues. And I thought we'd talk about, since we're talking about addiction, this week, for the second time this year, Heather Locklear essentially has been in the news. Do you remember Heather Locklear?
Of course.
Locklear,
yeah.
Melrose Place. She, her mom called the cops on her for acting erratically and threatening suicide. And she has threatened suicide several times now over the years, and like she threatened suicide in 2012, and her sister had to call the cops.
I didn't know about any of this.
Yeah. I'm sorry. 2008, she threatened suicide. In 2012, her sisters called the cops when she mixed prescription drugs with alcohol.
This is really a shame because I've had a crush on her forever.
Yeah, and she is a mess.
Ugh.
You should go.
Heather.
Talk with her. She's a total mess, and she also has been checked into facilities for alcohol and drug addiction. But it's never what I can find. It's not really specified what she's actually addicted to.
Right.
I think she's just a mess, and she's been on drugs for depression and anxiety for a long time.
I was just gonna say that. Guessing, I am 100% speculating here. There is nothing to support this guess, but I would guess, gun to my head, that she's probably on prescription drugs.
Yeah. Well,
which are arguably the worst thing to be hooked on.
Well, she was
especially
arrested.
Especially benzodiazepines. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Well, she was arrested. She was arrested for a DUI, but she wasn't drunk, but she was on prescription medication, And so she was driving drunk, you know.
Driving under the influence, yeah.
Yeah. And so she's just been a wreck for years and years and years and years and years. And they showed like a picture of her house because her house had been deemed like a dangerous hazard zone because mm-hmm. she said, I have a gun. And if the cops come here, I will shoot you. Mm-hmm. And so now it's on like the radar as like a dangerous mm-hmm. location. And I mean, I don't know how they're dealing with that, but she was checked into for this most recent one when the mom called the cops, she was checked into a mental hospital. Mm-hmm. But I don't know they don't reveal obviously like the status or anything of course, really, yeah. but
nor
anyway,
should, nor so, should they.
No, I mean, that'd
none
be
of
weird.
Our business. Yeah.
It's weird though. The amount that you can find on like, you know, when celebrities commit suicide, I just can't believe like with Stevie, it was immediately available on the LA coroner's website, suicide by hanging.
Yeah.
And it just feels like private.
Too much information.
She committed suicide. Okay. Not everyone needs to know how. And so with Anthony Bourdain and with Kate Spade, both hangings, we don't need to know. It's like showing the picture of the dead body after they got hit by a car on the news. Like you just won't do that.
I know what you mean, but I always kind of had a problem when they awkwardly don't discuss why too, because it's just so uncomfortable. Like everybody's wondering how do they do it.
Totally. No,
and
I
now
get
we're
that.
Not
going to yeah,
talk
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, I guess because I had the experience of knowing the person.
Yeah, that was closer to home for
it
sure.
It made
yeah.
me go, oh, this is why you don't want to share details.
Yeah,
because it's just unnecessary and sad for the person. You know, it's like, it's almost like, I feel like it's being seen in your most vulnerable, naked position in the world is seeing you by revealing how you killed yourself, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, it's just the ability of how easy it is to just tell the public this personal information is just strange that it's that easy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't do it, really. I'm not saying that because I understand that, you know.
I think it's really an internet thing, too. It's so quick.
Right.
So
well, I mean, I've
now.
Gone down the rabbit hole, and we're going to end in a second, but like, yep. I've gone down the rabbit hole, like, with the terrible things. I get really hooked on, I need to see the details of XYZ. Like, I was really obsessed with Jodi Arias. I don't know if you know who she is.
Never heard of her.
She killed her ex-boyfriend, Travis Alexander, and she stabbed him, like, 28 times or 38 times or something, and shot him in the head and slit him in the throat.
Seems like overkill, yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah.
And I needed to see his death photos. I heard there were death photos of him, and I needed to see them. I would not stop until I found his autopsy photos. And I will never unsee those images, and I am so scarred. And so I understand the fascination, and I totally get it. You know,
that's
but,
human curiosity.
Right. So I get it, but it's just weird that those are even online for someone, for me to even be able to seek.
But do you remember?
And by the way, if you're listening, don't look up the pictures. They're
yeah,
horrible.
They sound brutal. They're going to be
He's
trending.
Not what you would call a handsome man at that point.
Yeah, well, I
mean, imagine. It depends on your taste, of course.
Yeah, 28 stab wounds doesn't tend to improve anybody.
I mean, it was truly the most, and especially because you compare and contrast it with all the pictures you're seeing of him alive, and then just boom, the most horrific him 2 weeks dead, bloated, and rotting. It's
yeah.
just, I mean, dear God, what did I do? So I think we need to like put a cap on our curiosities for our own mental health, but they're going to be there.
I mean, you're wasting your time with that argument. They're always going to be there.
I know, of course they're
going to
be there.
They're always going to be there.
I know. All right. Well, this is episode, I think, number 59 or 58. 58 or 59.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And I've not once talked about addiction. So
that's not impressive.
I know. And yeah. So I'm sure people listening have been waiting for this to come up.
So for the record, if we end up doing a second one, it would be way more about recovery because I'm
yeah.
now in rehab and that's probably the more...
Currently
important.
You're in rehab?
No. Where
you're
I am in
the story.
In the story. Yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right,
part
right.
two. No, I'm not in rehab, no.
Right.
That's probably the more... Probably a little more in line with the show, to be honest, because that's where the help happens instead of just glorifying or reliving the
yeah,
shitty parts.
Yeah, well, that was my sick fascination yeah. that I needed to hear.
Well, I also have really fun stories from back then that are, you know...
All right, we'll come back good. In a couple of weeks and we'll do it again.
Yeah, yeah,
whatever. All right, well, and actually... I'm not going to say it. No, I was going to say who's... Never mind.
What?
I was going to say who's going to be on the show next week, but I don't want to
jinx
it.
They might, yeah, they
but
might
it would
flake.
Be great for you specifically, and I'll tell you why when we stop recording. But anyway, thank
DM
you.
Me and I'll let you know what she says.
Yeah, don't do that. So thanks for doing the show, and tell everyone where they can find you on Instagram, because you have a really big Instagram page.
They can find me on Instagram. I'm at The Real Colin Robinson. It's not that big. It's just me traveling and putting pictures of myself.
So here's the thing. When I met you, you had like 100 followers.
Yeah, I didn't really use social media. Yeah,
no.
I had deleted my Facebook and pretty much not using it. I had an Instagram, fledgling Instagram account with pictures of a couple of pictures of me and my dog.
Right.
Who I am madly in love with, by the way.
Yes, you are. Like overly in love, almost. Yeah. And you had...
She just turned 13. Last
Aww.
Month, everyone shout out
so
to...
So it's legal now, you guys can get married?
Shout out to baby Luigi.
Oh, that's so cute. But you had like 100 followers and... oh shit, and I forgot what I was going to say.
And all 100 of them were people that I knew as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like it wasn't like I had people following me.
Yeah, but
nobody wants to look at pictures of my dog and I.
I know what I was going to say. Because your name on there is at The Real Colin Robinson. And at the time you had 100 followers. And I just think it's so funny that someone with 100 followers is like, but I'm The Real Colin Robinson.
Okay, so I got...
Like, you don't really need
so
the
it
real.
Was a joke between me and friends. I got on Instagram like very, very early because I had a friend of mine who was just one of those internet people. She had websites and stuff. And she, you know, created it. She was, you know, she was just like, you need to get on this. This is going to be the next thing. Like, we're talking like way, way, way back. And...
Way back, like 2008.
Like, whenever it was, like, you know, before it was cool. Okay?
Yeah.
And so I went to start the thing, and Colin Robinson was already taken.
Oh.
And I was messaging the guy, like, jokingly,
please
like,
give
I.
Me
no, not please giving you, like, threatening him. I was like, we should, like, duel for this or whatever.
That's
you know,
funny.
It was funny. It was people. He's now since abandoned the account. I wish they would just shut it down and give it to
of
me.
Course.
That'd be great. But so then I made The Real Colin Robinson, and I was, like, messaging him.
That's
I was,
funny.
I was
okay.
like, I'm the actual one, you know? And it was funny, and there was a banter, and now it just looks like I'm...
But now it looks like you're full of yourself.
Now it looks like I think I'm something I'm not.
Because
yeah.
you have like 70,000 followers now, so you look like such an asshole.
Yeah, like I do not take myself that seriously.
I'm the real Colin.
I'm not like, you know, I'm not walking around like I'm the dude. I'm just, you know,
yeah.
I'm really
I think
nothing.
You can change your handle, though. Not that I'm telling you to, but I do think that's... I noticed the other day it said to change my... like.
Oh,
I,
you can change it whenever you want.
But then how... But what if I've been saying it's at Chris Karn for so long, and then I change it? Will it still go to Chris Karn and then direct them to my new name?
I think like it's kind of like a change of address form. I think it will for like a week or something.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, find Colin at The Real
Colin.
This
is super
Colin
compelling
Robinson.
For the listener, by the way.
I know.
Next week, you know what I'm going to look up to this? I'm going to have more information on how to change your Instagram handle next week.
I really talk way too much about Instagram. People definitely think I'm addicted and almost sick.
Yeah.
I'm definitely sick. So, yeah, and for me, you can always follow me on Instagram at Chris Karn and... support the show on Patreon. I feel guilty taking your money, but I'll take it. Go to patreon.com/mentallychill and please leave a 5-star review. And I'm also doing what I did with Kyle regarding reviews. So if you leave a 5-star iTunes review and you write a little blurb, I will pick my favorite 5-star blurb review. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And give you a free month on Patreon. And these have to be submitted post the show with Kyle. And whoever's I like the best going through this month. At
so basically,
of-
once you hear this clearly 5-star episode, go ahead and leave a review. You know what to do.
I don't know how to speak. Yes, whatever he said. So just leave 5 stars. If you do it before the end of July, and I really like it, I'll give you a free month on Patreon, and it will include some perks like Skyping with me and other cool things. So
and dinner with me if you're in LA.
If you're in LA and you... donate a lot of money, I'll go to dinner with you. So thanks for listening, and I think that's it. So remember, stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye, guys.